Welcome to Launch, where we explore the world of invention and entrepreneurship. I'm Jim DeBetta, here with my co-host, Ron Reardon, and our producer, Lee Cantor. Good morning.
How are you doing, Jim?
Doing good. Another day, you know, hopefully another dollar, as they say.
Hopefully. We'll see. That's what it's down to now? We'll hopefully?
No, I got a raise to a dollar and a quarter.
Oh, all right. Well, then.
Inflation.
Times
skyrocketing.
Times are changing. Well, Ron, we have a great guest and on an expert on a subject we have talked about, I'm sure, more than once. We have Edie Tulchin, the famed sourcing lady. Edie, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How's everybody today?
Doing fine. Just my heart's still racing from fighting Atlanta traffic.
I hear that. I'm fighting traffic in my office right now. No, only kidding.
I'm sure it's pretty heavy. But
she's got foot traffic problems.
Foot traffic. My little cat is running around the office.
There's a backup in the kitchen.
Yep.
Hey, Edie, I know that you listen to every single show we do, right? You got to say
yes. Oh, definitely.
There we go. Okay.
So this is ones that pertain to China sourcing, manufacturing, and safety issues.
Now, Edie, look, Ron and I don't proclaim to be experts in this area, although we all work in this business, and you know my experiences with manufacturing. But we want you to set the record straight, because on our last show, we tried to generalize and not be so definitive. But we want to ask you, first and foremost, just how important is safety, and what are some of the basic rules that inventors have to follow when it comes to getting their products developed?
Okay, well, I'd actually like to give an overview of not only safety issues, but exactly what's involved in China manufacturing. I don't know that, you know, half an hour show will do it, but I'd like to just highlight if possible. First and foremost, the most critical thing, and I think you, Jim, you've probably heard me mention this a thousand times already, is the product design evaluation. If their invention is a consumer product, most definitely a children's product, let's say a household item, an electronics item, you must take the prototype and present it to a Consumer Product Safety Commission's accredited lab for a product design evaluation.
Are those labs all over the country?
They're all over the world, actually. So it's an advantage. Ideally what I do typically is work with a lab in the United States for the evaluation, but most of these labs have affiliate offices, satellite offices in the country where you're having the product manufactured. And so once you have the evaluation in the United States, the actual production testing, which is usually, you know, several months later, it can be done in the country of manufacture.
Hey, Edie, a quick question just so the listeners can get a real handle on this. Let's say I invent a new type of coffee mug, obviously not necessarily a children's product, but is that something that would have to be evaluated? And after that answer, I think it would be important for everybody to learn about what areas or what types of products should be scrutinized and which ones really don't necessarily need to be evaluated for safety, although knowing that it's always a good idea to have a product evaluated in that way.
Right, exactly. Yes, a coffee mug should be evaluated because it's coming in contact with your mouth. And basically there could be some kind of glaze ceramic coating on there that could be poison. There could be lead paint on the on the painting, or, you know, sometimes you see those mugs with funny words and stuff like that. So, yes, it definitely should be evaluated. What types of products should be evaluated? Almost everything. The majority nowadays, because of that nightmare regulation that came out with the Consumer Product Safety Commission in November 08, it's called the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act, and it can be, all of the information can be accessed at www.cpsc, like Charles Paul Sam Charles.org. It's critical, you know, that this act be followed, because if it's not, and you manufacture your products, and another thing I wanted to clarify was that I think in your show that you spoke about safety issues, you had said you thought it was only imported products. all manufactured products are affected by the Consumer Product Safety Commission.
Wow.
Safety Improvement Act.
Well, Edie, I want to keep it real here for a second because I'm going to play devil's advocate with you. If I'm an inventor,
sure.
I call you up and I say, Edie, look, I've got a coffee mug. My kids aren't going to use it. Yeah, there's this outside chance that there could be something in the glass that could be poisonous. But come on, Edie, do I really have to do this? It's expensive to do. The factory said it's safe. At what point do you suggest to an inventor, other than being very prudent about safety, can an inventor say, I don't need to do this? Because it comes up, and a lot of people just don't have the money. Yet we all know it's important to do these
right.
things.
Right. Is this something where it's risky? Sure, it's risky. It may be more risky than you would be comfortable with, but if they're comfortable with it, is it legal to do it without it, or is this something that is mandatory?
It is mandatory for a good series, a good quantity of items. Now, the disadvantage is that these are all new inventions. The Consumer Product Safety Commission has a list of regulated products on their website that show, how shall I say, that must be tested. But these are not new inventions. So if you have a new invention, how do you know what your product is not going to be in that regulated products list? So for items, for example, kitchen products, I could give a whole list, actually. Definitely children's products, electronics, bicycles, things like that. Really, really, it's to your best interest to have them evaluated because if for whatever reason the Consumer Product Safety Commission starts checking, and I'm sure they will somewhere along the line, they are linking up with U.S. Customs and Border Protection, too, for imported shipments. And again, somewhere along the line, after this regulation's been out for a while, they will start checking. And violations can run into the thousands of dollars. So the question to the inventor would be, would you rather spend $1,000 for an evaluation? And this is all ballpark because each evaluation is individually quoted. So would you rather spend $1,000 now or $30,000 for a penalty later?
And how much time does it take for them to evaluate?
Oh, probably just under 2 weeks. It depends on the workload at the lab. But from the time the sample submitted, could be a week to 2 weeks tops.
Okay, Edie, what happens if I have a prototype and it's not the actual material, the final material that I'm going to use, or it's not even the final product that is going to be sold? It's kind of rough, and I say, hey, Edie, I need to get this evaluated. Is that okay to do, or what's the process there if you're not really don't have that retail-ready product yet?
Well, the more information you give to the lab, the better protected you are. So you can take a rough prototype and say, hey, I'm adding buttons. I mean, I'm speaking strictly for sewn items, but, we can change that as necessary, as needed. I'm adding buttons to this, and a zipper is going to be 4 inches instead of 5 inches. And sometimes you can send in samples of alternate components and say, please include these components into the final prototype. We haven't finished it yet. And they'll do a pretty good job of getting all issues addressed.
Now, what happens if my product is made of cotton? Let's use fabrics, because obviously fabrics, especially with kids, are a big deal. Kids wear clothes. They use baby blankets. They're wrapped around them. If I send in a sample for a design evaluation and it's made of cotton, but my end product is going to be polyester, am I able to send that cotton sample in and say, well, this is what my product looks like or is going to be, but it's going to be in polyester? Can that be okay to do?
Or do you have to send in a polyester sample along with it?
Well, it's best for the factory to have as much as possible, and no matter what the product is. But, yes, you can send, let's just say, it's in cotton, you're sending a swatch of polyester as well. Just give them as much information as possible, because let's just say cotton, the material of fabric cotton, may have certain issues, whereas polyester may have different issues, different types of flammability and things like that. So
you could actually give them a couple things that you're considering. So since they're doing this kind of evaluation, they can evaluate these things and help you make an educated choice of what's the best product to use?
Oh, absolutely, because if you've ever taken, I know Jim has seen them, if you ever take a look at these reports, they're what I call the sourcing Bible, because there is everything in there that you will need in order to source and manufacture your product. And if for whatever you're working with a sourcing consultant or sourcing professional and that person looks over the report and says something's missing, I believe you have like 30 days to go back to the lab and say, hey, wait a minute, you guys forgot to address such and such issue.
Okay,
so it's not only important, obviously, to have the design evaluation, but, and we can get into that a little bit later, it's important to work with, for your first project, to work with a sourcing professional.
Okay, well, Edie, if, let's say I'm an inventor, I didn't know about this Consumer Product Protection Act, and I've got 6,000 of my new and improved coat hanger that have just shipped in from China, and now they're in my warehouse. What do I do now?
Good question. First of all, that's a good example of coat hanger. I don't think that would, be such a bad idea. But what you could do is take a prototype to the USA office and say, hey, look, I have 6,000 of these guys. Can you test them for me? First of all, can you evaluate it? I mean, it can be done after the fact. You may be able to protect yourself that way by getting it tested within the United States. And then if it fails, well, then you can't sell them.
Oops.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going around. That's for sure. I get that all the time.
So, but if you don't get it tested and you're unaware, then you could still sell them?
No, you can't.
Well, people do. I mean, you know as well as I do. People, I wrote an article about this. I think you read it. 10 years ago, nobody, it was like a don't ask, don't tell policy. I used to approach retailers, and I won't name them, but... Mm-hmm. Nobody asked for any documentation for anything. At best, it was maybe for choking, for anything children's. And I'm talking about everybody.
But now they ask for more documentation?
Now they ask for things. So they ask for, on the setup forms, they'll ask, has your product been tested for this? Mm-hmm. Does it meet this requirement?
So once you get your product tested at one of these facilities, do you get some sort of a certification? You mentioned a report, but do they give something that says that they kind of bless it and say it's okay to be sold?
No, you don't really need it. You just need a copy of the tests, because that from that, you as the importer, you as the, you're considered the manufacturer, produce the documentation that is required for this act.
Okay, well.
And for example, for children's products, the two most important items that are required, the two most important documents are, number one, the general conformity certificate, which is created from the testing programs, and the tracking labels. And the tracking labels basically are put on, let's just say, a crib or on a stuffed animal or whatever, that will basically include the name of the manufacturer, the location of the manufacturer, and again, because I work with China, I'll give you how that works. It would have to be the city, the province, and the country, and couple of other key points that must be included, and all of the tracking label information and the general conformity certificate information is all included on the Consumer Product Safety Commission's website.
These are also known as law labels, right, Edie?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
These are also known as law labels, correct?
No, not at all. The law label is for bedding and cushions and pillows and things like that. Those law labels are let's just say you go to Walmart and you pick up a pillow and you bring it home and you're looking at the labels and you want to cut them off so you don't scratch your neck when you're sleeping on them. And you see where it says, do not remove under penalty of law. And that's like the scariest thing. But basically they mean that labels should not be removed until it reaches your, final destination, wherever it's going. That is called a law label, and that's basically for pillows, cushions, and items similar to that. Tracking labels are for children's products, and those are, so, for example, if something happens to the baby or if there is a product recall, that particular batch of product can be traced back to the manufacturer.
Okay. Now, if I have a product that's been through this product design evaluation and it's been tested and everything's fine, is there anything I can put on my website or on my marketing collateral that says, wahoo, I passed the evaluation?
Well, it's always good to say safety tested. And, you know, I mean, I'm not into advertising or marketing. I guess the other gentleman there would be able to, you know, say that. But you can always say safety tested or, you know, certifications can be furnished upon request or things like that.
But then you have things like, you know, mom tested or, you know, you see all these little
pretend,
things.
Right?
Right. I mean, which one of those are real, Edie? I mean, you see that. I mean, mom tested, I mean, really, what does that mean? I mean, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Mom tested means, you know, a group of moms got together and tested it. That's not going to pass the Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act requirements.
Right.
With this being, you know, kind of a recent law, I think you said November of 2008, I think that probably, you know, 99% of the inventor community is totally unaware of this.
That's correct, which is why I'm on a campaign.
It's scary. I mean, it's a tough thing today. But I tell a lot of people that, you know, it's an added expense up front, but, you know, you don't want that worry. And then some people say, well, I've got product liability insurance, so, well, you know, if something goes wrong, I'm covered. And I'm like, well, maybe you are, but you're still going to have to go through the process. You know, it's one of those things where they just feel like that. It's like not having any kind of insurance. Some people will just say, I don't need it.
Right.
Because the chances are that
slim.
It's right. Small. But, you know, I guess when you get involved with the federal government and safety.
Right. It's
and
a gamble. It's a gamble because you don't know. Just like with importing a shipment. This has nothing to do with safety issues. When you import a shipment, you need to know that you have all the special required documentation in order for the shipment to be legally imported into the United States. Now, you know, there might be some shipments that come through without XYZ document or this document or that document. But you know what? Whatever the odds are that Customs decides that day to inspect your shipment, if you don't have that documentation, you're going to be penalized or your shipment's going to be sent back. Well, that's the same thing with the government, you know, the Safety Act. You know, sooner or later, and I haven't yet because it's still early, but sooner or later they're going to start inspecting.
Right.
And so you have to be ready.
Well, Edie, you said that you're on a campaign to make sure that everybody knows about this. I know you're a professional member of the United Inventors Association, and they have a digital library. Have you considered writing an article about this particular act? So that just to give a full alert to all the inventors out there.
Oh, actually, yes, I have. I've written numerous articles on them. They're on it's at Inventor's Digest magazine, and that's a good idea because what I would do is request permission from the Inventor's Digest people to post that article on the United Inventors Association. And I thank you for that. That's a great idea.
Okay.
You know, Edie, I think at the end of the day, it's really up to the retailers. Because like I said, back when I was selling a lot of children's products, the retailers didn't ask, and that's the inventor's out, so to speak. If there's nobody making you provide this information other than the fear that the government's going to catch you in that small instance.
Well, no, they actually are.
Well, now I'm saying now they are.
Now they are.
Now they are.
Yes.
But not all of them are, okay? And you know, I talk to buyers every day. Most are. I think they're coming around. I think in another year or two you're going to see it's going to be a complete requirement, and depending on the category of product, I think if you're selling a coffee mug, believe me, I can tell you that they're not making this a mandatory thing. Children's products, definitely yes, but then the inventor's not going to have a choice. It's okay if you want to sell.
Right, it'll just be part of the process.
You know, any mass merchant, any cataloger, you're going to have to do that at some point before you go ahead and have that product sold in.
Right.
So
right, and what it's going to have to happen is that the inventors are going to have to factor that cost into the whole picture.
Right. Now, Edie, is there any other common mistake that inventors kind of try to skate past without really doing enough due diligence, in your opinion?
Well, no. Actually, I think it's most now with safety issues. That just takes over everything and overpowers everything. Other than that, you know, if they go through the channels, definitely think they should read my book. And it's not that I'm promoting it.
Yes, you are. Come on. It's okay.
It sounds like you're promoting it.
It's okay.
Well,
and the title of that book is?
It's called Sourcing Smarts, Keeping It Simple with China Sourcing and Manufacturing. And that's basically, it's written with Don Debelak and Eric Debelak. And it's got everything in there. It's a sourcing Bible, like the design evaluation.
Is that current information? When was it published?
It is as current as possible because it was published last year. So it was right before the Safety Act. But there is enough ammunition in there as to, you know, who to contact with the Consumer Product Safety Commission. I did not actually mention the Safety Act, but I did address production testing, design evaluations. It's got a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah, I read your autographed copy you sent to me.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, it is. It's a good, you know, if somebody has absolutely no knowledge of what to do in this part of the business, the manufacturing side and the safety side, it's great because you keep it very simple.
Right.
You know, it's not too technical. And, you know, from that, if you're not at least asking questions, then you haven't really read the book.
So yes.
Right. It's just a guide to get you to do what you need to do.
And, Edie, I'm speaking to the Atlanta Club here now in September. So if you'll send me an autographed copy, I'd be glad to tell everybody they need to buy one.
Oh, there's a little arm twisting right there.
By
Ron.
Absolutely.
Nice, Ron. The way to angle to get a free book. Nice. Nice.
Now, Edie, how'd you get into this business?
Oh, boy. It's a long time. I don't want to date myself, but I started at 5 years old.
back when dinosaurs roamed the earth, right?
No, not that bad. But
ouch, Ron.
right out of college in the 70s, okay, so I'm revealing my age pretty much, in New York City, and I lived in the Bronx at the time, most people who didn't really have specific training, like a nurse or a doctor, obviously, went to employment agencies. You know, we didn't have careerbuilders.com. We didn't have any of that. So I went to an employment agency, and the first thing they asked women back then is, can you type? And I didn't really type well, but I said yes. And the first position they placed me with was with an import-export company.
Oh, cool.
I didn't even know what import-export was. But, you know, I got the job, and the first thing I did was started typing. And I just opened my eyes and my ears and learned what was going on. And believe it or not, the commodity they dealt with, there were two things. It was frozen fish and bicycles. And after a while, I didn't care for it too much. It just wasn't for me, and I went to another employment agency. And they asked the same questions. It was after about a year or so. Because, you know, most kids out of college, they work for about a year, and then they look to change. And I went to yet another import-export company. And that's what happened over several years. I couldn't get away from it because, you know, I had the experience. So up until about 1997, I lived in the New York City area, and my last position was with an importer of silk and silk garments and things like that, and I was the import manager of that particular company. I relocated to Florida, New York in 1997, and it's basically farming communities here. No one even knew what import-export was even here in 1997. So I opened up EGT Global Trading.
But that's where you learned all the ropes of how to get things manufactured?
I'm sorry?
That's where you learned the ropes about how to get things manufactured?
Yes. It was on-the-job training over the years, working for various import companies with various commodities and learning the laws and regulations of the various commodities. And in 2000, the year 2000, you know, I figured, okay, let me do it because it is very important to have. I studied and applied for the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Customs Broker License. And so that really helps. You know, it's a very grueling course. And once you get your license, and they take forever to give you your license, it's really, you're really qualified.
So if my clients want to have their products cleared through customs, once they ship from China, they land in Long Beach or New York, Port of New York, they obviously have to get those goods from the port. They have to be cleared by customs, U.S. customs.
Yes.
Before
yes.
they can be released and picked up. So you can officially, as a U.S., and if I get it wrong, a U.S. customs agent or
customs broker,
you can clear that merchandise for them.
Yes, okay. Yes, or I can arrange to have it cleared. You know, I work out of New York, but there is remote filing, you know, Long Beach, wherever.
Right.
You know, even if the shipment's going to Canada, I can work it,
okay,
or wherever it's going.
Hey, Edie, because we don't have much time, I want to get a couple things in here before we wrap up today. What do you see happening in the industry over the next year or two or three years? I know there's no crystal ball, but in terms of just manufacturing or safety, what do you see or have heard by being an expert in this area that's going to occur that may change the business as far as inventors are concerned?
Okay, well, budgets, number one, because they're going to have to maybe find increased funding. On the China end, I see that more factories are going to be learning the regulations, because in November of last year, I would mention to the factory, oh, by the way, we'll need to have some testing, or have you heard of the new Consumer Product Safety Improvement Act? And they had absolutely no clue. Now they're gradually learning. Any reputable factory now should have an idea of what's required. So basically, you know, I just see that more factories, if they want the business, are going to have to start learning how to comply.
Well, can those factories, Edie, so, okay, let's say you have a qualified factory, and I have a product, and I don't have the design evaluation done here, and basically the factory emails me and says, listen, we're compliant, we're following all the laws and regulations for the U.S. Is it enough to have them provide the design evaluation, or do you need to get it from a designated approved vendor from the Consumer Product Safety Commission?
No, it's absolutely not possible, because what they may think is appropriate testing for your product in China is not necessarily what the United States feels appropriate.
Even if you have to go to the certified place.
The accredited lab.
Say we follow their rules by the letter, we do the same testing they do, it doesn't matter?
You know, and I'm going to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I mean, you said if they're reputable factories.
Come on, Jim.
I mean,
there's
they're reputable, but you know what? You need to protect yourself.
Okay.
You know,
fair.
You really need to have that done.
Okay.
Now, obviously, like you had asked me before, what are some products that don't fall into that the Improvement Act? Obviously, a tote bag that is used only by adults, or a baseball cap, or things like that, maybe a trivet, you know, that kind of thing. But pretty much, almost everything is going to eventually fall into that act.
Okay. Edie, when you look at Made in America versus Made in China, what kind of trends do you see?
I think you need to elaborate a little bit.
Well, when you look at the new act that we've got and imports and like that, I know it's less expensive to make it in China, but I've heard that they're starting to raise, you know, the, I don't know if it's the minimum wage or whatever, but that things are getting a little bit more expensive in China to make than they used to be.
They are, but I think it's still going to be quite some time before it matches, if ever.
Is it true that a lot of Chinese companies are moving manufacturing here?
I've not heard that.
Unfounded rumor.
I've not heard that yet.
Go to scope.com to
Scopes to check it out.
Yeah, check it out.
You know, it's very prevalent. Edie, look, I mean, what you're doing is obviously very important. It's just yet another part of the inventing process where if people just, I know it's not easy to swallow, but spent the money up front to get these things done, like patents, like marketing, it's a business. We say this almost every week on this show. Inventing is a business. It doesn't happen for free. There's no easy way around it. If you want to manufacture products,
right,
import them and market and sell them to major retailers or catalogers, you've got to do this stuff. It is a very serious thing, and the consequences on the manufacturing safety side can be devastating, not only financially but personally. I mean, to know that you had a product that
injured someone?
Yeah, that you just know, you just skip the process. You say, you know, I'm going to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Is scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Edie, I've seen a lot of checklists for inventors of, you know, first you do this and next you do that. And I think that this new act from November 2008 is not on any checklist that I've ever seen.
Right, and it should be. And, you know, that's my mission. I'm trying to get it out there.
That's why she's trying to get it out.
You got to run for Congress or something. You got to lobby. And then we're your friends.
I wouldn't go that far. But
all right. Well, hey, you know, sometimes that's the action you got to take. Edie, is there a website or you know, for you that or any information that somebody can learn more about what you do and how you help, you can help them?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, let me give you my email address, because I have a really good article that I wrote recently that addresses sort of an overview of what's going on. And the name of the article is Manufacturing Your Invention Requires Much More Than Just Locating a Factory. Anybody can email me and request a copy of that. It's EGT, three initials, like EGT Global Trading, at Warwick, WARWICK.net. I'm happy to send out the article. And I also have a website. It would be either sourcinglady.com or EGTGlobalTrading.com.
Okay. Well, Edie, look, obviously we can talk forever about this subject, but at least we got some clarity on some of these issues from the expert herself, right, Ron?
Yeah, and it looks like, you know, the price of inventing just went up.
Yeah, and hey, look, that's the name of the game, but it's the old risk-reward thing. You want to do it right, you're dedicated. Mm-hmm. You stay with it, and
either do it right or get it licensed.
Yeah, right. That's the whole other side of the coin, right?
Yeah, so let the licensee deal with all this.
Yeah.
Well, Edie, look, we really appreciate you. You know, I know you work on another time zone, and so I know this is getting up early for you. So we appreciate your time, and certainly we thank you for giving us all this great information here.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, and this has been another great issue of Launch with Jim DeBetta, Lee Cantor, and our very, very special guest, Edie Tokin.